WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Jim Hightower doesn't like to be in the middle of the road, and he doesn't like it when he finds the Democratic Party there. He once said, "There's nothing in the middle of the road except yellow stripes and dead armadillos." You can bet he'll be coming up with more one-liners for the radio commentaries that he will syndicate beginning next month. Hightower used to edit the Texas Observer, then he went into politics. He was twice elected Commissioner of Agriculture for the state of Texas. He lost his third election in 1990. While he was commissioner, he co-founded the New Populist Forum, a network of state officials and congressmen. Hightower describes himself as a populist, but what does he mean by that?
I am a populist out of the old-time populist tradition of the 1870s, 80s, and 90s, people who basically believe that too few people control too much of the money and power, and they're using that power to control the rest of us. And that's what I find in the country today, that while I'm a Democrat, I have a lot of liberal notions myself. I also have a few conservative notions. I find most people a mix, and the true political spectrum isn't right to left. I would say maybe 20-30% of the people are either ideologically right-wing or left-wing. Rather, the true spectrum is top to bottom. And the vast majority of people no longer feel, even within shouting distance, Terry, of the powers at the top, both Democrat and Republican. I find around the country, as I travel and been doing a lot of speaking, that there's tremendous activism where people feel that they can make a difference when they feel that they count at the local level on school issues, environmental issues, economic issues. It's really ordinary people doing extraordinary things all across the country. I want to tap into those folks and bring their stories to a national audience.
You've been out of office for 2 years. In 1990, you lost the race for agricultural commissioner in the state of Texas. How does it feel to be out of politics now?
Actually, very good. There's a lot that I miss, in particular dealing with these, you know, amazing people who are out there, which we had the privilege of doing in the Agriculture Department. I don't miss the pressure to raise huge sums of money and the general just general pressure of politics and day in, day out, having to sort of be on and be campaigning. But for me, this is a chance to kind of, through this radio show, to do to apply a little entrepreneurship to my politics, and to have that national forum and talk about a much broader range of issues. I guess I'd say that, Terry, my politics has never been dependent on my being in any particular office. I've, you know, was 15 years a political activist before I ever ran for office, 8 years in office, and now expect to just continue right straight ahead with my viewpoint and issues hammering out there. So the luxury that that gave me is that I was willing to lose. And that meant that I was willing to take on the chemical lobby, take on the Farm Bureau insurance lobby, take on the Bush administration, even the Democrats when they were wrong, knowing that that was making enemies that would, you know, come home to roost. And they did, sort of about 40-ton chickens coming home to roost there on my head in 1990.
What does it do to your ego when you lose an election after you've won two of them? Were you crushed?
No, I've you know, I run on the basis that that I'm going to say what I believe in and try to actually deliver for the folks who put me there. Very odd notion I know in politics today. So it is never astonishing to me that I lose an election. My first race, 1980, for a railroad commissioner in Texas, I lost, but I ran well, ran very close. Same thing happened this time. You know, I lost out of 4 million votes, about 47,000 votes. I didn't lose on any of the issues that I had fought for. I didn't lose on my populist viewpoint. I'd lost in a classic kind of Lee Atwater attack, suggesting I was a flag burner. So had I lost on principles, had I lost on my viewpoints, been rejected, in, if you will, by folks who matter to me, then I would feel badly about it. But I don't. And my ego is not attached to the office. It's attached to my to my beliefs.
Is there a commercial that had you burning a flag or something?
Yeah, it was a rather classic one. They had a. It started with a long-haired guy setting a flag on fire and throwing it down on the ground, and then my picture came up out of the flag, suggesting that I was an advocate of flag burning, and had me tied, saying there was an FBI investigation of me, which there was not. And I have all these supporters out there who are soft supporters. You know, they like me, but they don't maybe know a whole lot about me. So they're watching that commercial in Dallas and Houston where it ran, and they're saying, "Well, God, I liked Old Hightower, but I didn't know he burned flags." So my problem was not just that commercial, but my own supporters thought I was going to win very handily, and the polls were showing that early on. So they didn't give me the kind of money I needed to have a TV campaign. So those ads went unanswered.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Jim Hightower, who has a new radio commentary that will begin in mid-February, syndicated radio commentary in many stations around the country. Hightower is the former agricultural commissioner of the state of Texas. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Jim Hightower, former Commissioner of Agriculture for the state of Texas, and also co-founder of the New Populist Forum, which is now called Democrats 2000. Now, you spent most of the 1980s as the Commissioner of Agriculture in Texas. You didn't grow up on a farm. Your father did. Why was agriculture that important to you?
Food is a tremendous issue to take to the people because it embodies so much of what can be right about our society, and too often what is wrong with it. You can hold up a loaf of bread and talk about the penny that the farmer gets out of that. You can talk about the farm worker problems. You can talk about the environmental abuse that's embodied in that loaf of bread. You can talk about the monopoly power that controls the market in that bread. You can talk about consumer value being lost, not only in terms of price, but also in terms of the quality of the bread. So it's a wide range of issues to talk to people about all of the populist themes that I care about. It's also in Texas is an office where I could do something about what I was talking about. It wasn't like going to Congress and saying, "Hey, why don't we try to pass a law allowing farmers markets to exist?" In this office, I could, and we did, establish 100 farmers markets in the state. You could do things rather than just talking about it, and you could help the people you wanted to help, farmers, farm workers, consumers, etc.
I know one of the things you tried to do is to convince farmers to use less chemical pesticides or no chemical pesticides. How did you try to do that?
Well, we did it not only by pointing out market availability for it, but we did it the old-fashioned way of finding pioneers, those ordinary folks out there who do those extraordinary things. And there was one guy particularly, tell you a quick story, Terry, if I might, out in Mule Shoe, Texas. Now, this is not a hippie center of our state. This is far west Texas. And this farmer named Jim Crawford out there who farmed conventionally for 17 years, meaning he used the chemicals. He put the pesticides on there. But he was going to lose his farm. He had a 900-acre cotton and a corn farm. That's not a science demonstration project. That's a real farm. But he was going to go broke because the price of corn was low and the cost of the chemicals, et cetera. So he began to think back about, well, his mother and them didn't use all those chemicals when they used to farm, so surely there's a way to do it. And investigate it and realize that organic farming means not just doing without chemicals, but building up your soil and learning the science of organic farming, which he did. And we have just beaucoup of manure stacked up in the feedlot beside the feedlots out there in West Texas. So he began to take that and put it in the ground. And sure enough, after 2 or 3 years, he was getting 150% of the yield that he used to get out of that same old ground because he was putting the manure in it. That soil used a third less water than the old one did because it had the strength in it and the tilth. He got 1.5 times the price on that organic corn that he got on the conventional corn. So he became a disciple, an evangelist almost, of organic farming, not because he had any hippie epiphany, but because it made sense to him, made dollars, kept his farm for him. So he then became one of our teachers going across with great credibility, not me, a politician, not some academic or some think tank person, but a real-life farmer who had turned it around. And we had example after example of that all around the state. And then we made clear that this is where the market's heading. You can fight a lot of things in agriculture, but you can't fight what it is the consumer is saying they really want to buy. So we linked, it's common sense stuff, we linked the farmer to the consumer.
During your tenure as agricultural commissioner in Texas, did you see a lot of small farmers lose their farms?
I saw thousands of them lose their farms. And the bad news is there are thousands more losing them right now. Just because the TV cameras packed up and left a few years ago doesn't mean that it's not still going on out there. The saddest thing of all this is not just people losing their farms, but that it's the deliberate policy of government that is causing this. These aren't people who can't make it. These are folks like Jim Crawford and Muleshoe who are trying to keep up, who are desperately learning and finding new ways to do things. But a lot of them just get caught up in the crunch of low prices that are set by federal agriculture policy, of markets that are controlled by monopoly corporations, a desire by our own federal government to shove people down and ultimately off the land. There's an old saying out there that you can still make a small fortune in farming under these agriculture policies, but you have to start with a large fortune. And that's what a lot of them have done. I think it's a tragedy for the country, because it's not a matter of a few farms. It's a matter of the opportunity to farm disappearing from us. And now with the North American Free Trade Agreement, with the GATT negotiations, with all these esoteric international agreements that are being hammered out in back rooms, we're going to see more farmers losing their land if we allow that stuff to go through, and actually substantial portions of our own food production leaving this country to go to places where, you know, they can take advantage of whatever whim they have involving pesticides, take advantage of very, very cheap labor, cheap land, subsidized interest, that sort of thing, and then ship all that back into our market.
I want to get back to farming. Your grandparents on your father's side, I believe, were tenant farmers in northern Louisiana. So your father grew up on a farm.
Yes, not in northern Louisiana, in East Texas. Also on my mother's side.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
So both your parents grew up on farms.
Yes. In fact, my mother grew up on they were not only tenant farmers, but basically subsistence farmers, mm-hmm. meaning they made everything. They had maybe a cash crop or two, but not much of one. They made their own soap, you know, that kind of thing. So today my mother, if it doesn't come prepared and if it doesn't plug into the wall, she's not much interested in going back to nature.
So what did your parents tell you about why they left the farm?
There wasn't any choice. In fact, my daddy told me that his mother had said when he got out of high school, or about the time he's going to get out of high school, get off this farm. There's not anything here for you. And so he took the interurban train, which existed at the time, from from the town of Terrell, near where they farmed, over into Dallas, where he ended up getting a job, and later moving into Denison, where he met my mother. And it was shortly after he left the farm, in fact, that his own parents had to leave the farm. They migrated out to Arizona, and my grandfather, with my uncle, was one of the early hired hands out there, helped to put in some of the citrus orchards, which are now Charles Keating Savings and Loan developments.
Do you ever wish you had the chance to live or grow up on a farm?
No, not actually. I have it in my genes to want to have be digging in the earth out there. But I've got a bit more of the roamer in me, the desire to move around and reach out and go beyond. And I did have the privilege because of not only my grandparents, but my aunts and uncles were farmers. So I spent a lot of time on the farms. But my work really is in trying to help people see that we're really linked together, that, again, that notion, that old populist notion that too few people control too much of the money and power, and that whatever our issue is, that's ultimately what we're fighting. Somebody said, we might not have come over on the same boat, but we're in the same boat now. That's a very powerful unifying political notion. I see myself as sort of a Johnny Appleseed of that notion.
Jim Hightower begins his syndicated series of radio commentaries next month. This is Fresh Air.